Yagnad Bhavati Parjanya. By offering sacrifices to Lord Vishnu, one can have sufficient rainfall. When there is sufficient rainfall, the earth becomes fit to produce everything. Sarva Kama Duga Mai. If one can utilize the land properly, one can get all the necessities of life from the land, including food grains, fruits, flowers, and vegetables. Everything one gets for material wealth is produced from the earth, and therefore it is said, Sarva Kama Duga Mai, Bhagavatam 1.10.4. Everything is possible by performing yajna. Therefore, although Pururava desired something material, he factually performed yajna to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord is at Hokshuja beyond the perception of Pururava and anyone else. Consequently, some kind of yajna must be performed to fulfill the desires of the living entity. Yajnas can be performed in human society only when society is divided by varnashram dharma into four varnas and four ashramas. Without such a regulative process, no one can perform yajnas, and without the performance of yajnas, no material plans can make human society happy at any time. Everyone should therefore be induced to perform yajnas. In this age of Kali, the yajna recommended is Sankirtan, the individual and collective chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. This will bring the fulfillment of all necessities for human society. Om Jnana Tamarandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. What a wonderful example we just heard from Divyanga Prabhu about this purport. It says here that everyone should therefore be induced to perform yajnas. In this age of Kali, the yajna recommended is Sankirtan, the individual or collective chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And so we had a lady who didn't know anything about Krishna consciousness movement, probably didn't know anything about the purpose of life, but she was induced to perform yajna, chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, and the sky is the limit for her at this point in her life. So thank you for doing that. And Arvind also, the yajna master. So it's often thought, or maybe even people feel they've experienced it, that lawyers will do anything for money. But I'm here today to tell you that lawyers won't do everything for money. I'm glad to see you're feeling well, Mother Lakshmimani. because lawyers sometimes take cases they call it pro bono, they do it for free. And actually, I want to take a case for free today, and that's the case of Pururava. Because I think that Pururava, you know, he has been blamed in a lot of ways that maybe need to at least be seen in a more balanced perspective. We've heard day after day for the last week or so how he's quite a lusty fellow, but the question does he really deserve to be faulted in that way for being a lusty fellow? And there are at least a couple of things that I want to present in his defense here today that might help balance the perspective we have on him and the lessons we're learning from Srimad Bhagavatam in this section. Is he really worthy of blame? There's a historical incident in the Mahabharata that basically says that he's not. He shouldn't be blamed for being having lusty desires. We all know that as part of his evil plan, Duryodhana sent the Pandavas and their mother Kunti to Varnavat with the idea that we're going to send you to a little vacation, to resort for a while. We built this palace out at Varnavat, and you can go and stay there for some time and enjoy in the countryside. What he didn't tell them was that house, that palace, was made out of a substance, lac or shellac or wax, a very flammable substance. And so the plan was that they would go there, and while they were sleeping, the palace would be put on fire and they would all perish in the fire. That was his evil plan. Fortunately, through some intrigue, Vidura was aware of the plan and sent somebody to help them, and they were able to escape from the house after it was set on fire from that palace. And that night, it was at night, when they came out of the tunnel that had been dug for their escape, Bhima actually took his mother and his four brothers on his shoulders and his arms, and he ran with them through the forest for a considerable distance, for a considerable time during that night, so they could escape this danger. And so finally they came to a place to rest, and it's interesting that he's the one that had the four on him, the two twins, Sahadev and Nakul, and Arjun, Yudhisthira, Mother Kunti. When they got to this place, after Bhima had carried them to the forest for so far, and they were the ones resting, and Bhima was the one standing guard. And so that place happened to be near the dwelling place of two Rakshasas, Hidimba and Hidimbi. They were brother and sister. And so these demons, these Rakshasas, they have the kind of like an animal sense of being able to smell other types of living entities. And so they could smell that there were some human beings nearby. Hidimba could smell them. And he told his sister, Hidimbi, go and bring me that human flesh because I want to enjoy. We're going to have a feast tonight. And so Hidimbi went and approached the place where Bhima was guarding his sleeping family members. And when she saw Bhima, she became smitten with lusty desires. So much so that she exhibited another trait that these the demons have, is that she could disguise herself in different ways. And so she disguised herself as a beautiful woman. So in this disguise of a beautiful woman, she approached Bhima and was talking with him. Of course, one side lesson here is that if you're ever alone in the forest and a beautiful woman comes up to you, you know, watch out, because it's maybe something that that you not what you think it is. But anyway, she was talking with Bhima, and apparently some time was passing, and Hidimba was wondering, well, where is Hidimbi with my meal? And so he went there to see what was going on. And when he came and he saw that Hidimbi had changed herself into a form of a beautiful woman, he could immediately understand what was going on. He could, it probably says in the purport here, Vokaram Yagyatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. He talks about how Krishna's authority is there in all planets. And so in all planets, there are commonalities to the conditioned form or existence of life. And one of those commonalities is this idea that we're all pervaded with lust. Conditioned souls pervaded with lust no matter what planet they're on, or no matter what species of life they may be found in. Here, Hidimbi, Rakshasa race, man-eaters, different than human beings. Yet she also, and Hidimba, her brother, could understand by just by seeing that she had changed herself into a form of a beautiful woman, he could understand that, yes, She is smitten by lust for my meal. What's going on here? You know, I'm going to eat these people. But you want to enjoy lusty relationships with my meal. This is crazy, he was saying. What's going on? And so Bhima, he gave the edict that I want to point to here as the first reason why Pururava should not necessarily be over-criticized for his lusty desires. Bhima said, and he rebuked Hidimba, and this is before he fought with him and killed him. He rebuked him, is that, why are you criticizing her for a fault that pervades all living beings? Why are you criticizing her for a fault that pervades all living beings? He's indicating that it's not to be blamed. In one sense, of course, it is to be blamed in that, yes, we've given up our relationship with Krishna, we've come to this material world. But when we come under the control of material nature, we're swept away like in a river with no control of our own. And so in a sense, a fault that pervades, and Krishna Sarupa Prabhu was getting at this yesterday a bit with his story about the teacher being criticized. He was getting at the same point. Therefore, I'm inspired to follow his example in defending Pururava here a bit, you know. I got that from his class yesterday. He's giving some little defense. So why should Pururava be blamed, just like Kadimbi, why do they should be blamed for a fault that pervades all living beings? We're all subject to this fault. And so therefore, if we display it, then there's no need to vilify one for that. So that's the first point in defense of Pururava here. And another is that, and I think probably more germane to why this discussion is in the Srimad Bhagavatam, is that Pururava shouldn't be considered, shouldn't be seen as an ordinary person. He shouldn't be seen as an ordinary person, because if we listen to what happened to him at the time when the age changed to Treta Yuga. When the age changed to Treta Yuga, it's explained in text number 43 that within his heart he could perceive the desire to perform yajna for fulfilling fruitive desires. That method of sacrifice appeared within his heart. He could perceive that. He could perceive that. That change. Such a subtle change in the millennium, the time. And what he's perceiving is a yajna, performance of sacrifice. And as explained in today's verse, sacrifice, performing sacrifice for who? For Vishnu. Prabhupada says in the purport here that therefore, although Pururava desired something material, he factually performed yajna to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so he may be pervaded by lust like the rest of us, but what's different than the rest of us is that to fulfill his desire, he performed sacrifice, the recommended process given in the Vedic scriptures for pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead to achieve his desire. And that's not an ordinary thing. That's not an ordinary thing. Actually, Prabhupada is explaining here in the purport something very interesting about the performance of sacrifice. Without performing sacrifice, the Lord remains at Hokshija. There's a very interesting analysis of this word at Hokshija that involves the Sanskrit alphabet. Is it one? It means outside the Sanskrit alphabet, right? Something like that, Hokshija. And so, we're outside our perception. At Hokshija means outside our perception. But by performing the sacrifice, Actually, you can perceive the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's no longer at Hokshijo. You can perceive him. And we see this in different ways. Devotees tend to see the world differently than others. Just like Prabhupada. He was in South India, I believe it was in Hyderabad, with the devotees. And I think it must have been 74 or 75, 75 maybe. And it had been a drought there for many years. And the devotees were having a festival there, Pandal program, and they all went on Harinam. And after going on Harinam, then rain came. And Prabhupada immediately pointed out that because the Hare Krishna devotees performed the Sankirtan Yajna, the Yajna for this age to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, therefore there was rainfall. And so he immediately took credit. By performance of Yajna, rain has come. And that's based on the authority of Bhagavad Gita. In a similar way, a lot of the devotees, we take credit for everything. Oh, there's an interest in yoga and vegetarianism. It's because of Sankirtan Yajna. It's true. It is because of those things. It is because, but people will criticize us, oh, you take claim for everything, everything. But that's because they can't see it Hokshijo because they're not performing sacrifice. But if you perform sacrifice, you can see that, yes, it's true. By performing, trying to please the Supreme Lord, all kind of good things come in one's life individually, in society as a whole. And so you actually can perceive the unperceivable Supreme Lord by the performance of sacrifice. And so Puruṛāva, he understood all of this. He understood not only that, but he also understood that it's described in, it says in the verse, Urvasi Loka, Urvasi Lokam, Anvichan. Although desiring to go to the planet where Urvasi was staying. He could understand that if I go to that planet, I still will be able to, on that planet also, they're also enjoying these kind of lusty relationships. It's not that something different is going on there. It's the same. So therefore, I can desire to go there, and I know that I'll be able to fulfill my desire, not that I go there and it's something completely different. He understood that this is about the universe, this kind of a universal principle, that the same things that go on here go on in the higher planets, maybe in a different form or something, a little different, or in the lower planets, same thing. Same activities are going on, eating, sleeping, mating, defending. And so I'll go there and I'll still be able to do this. He understood this. Not that he had to guess or think, oh, the planets are, there's nothing there. If we go to the moon planet, there's nothing on the moon planet, that it's just a barren place. No. How's that? No, he understood this. He's a much more advanced in knowledge of the universe than we are in today's world. And so, therefore, Puruṛāva, neither can he be condemned for being lusty, neither can he be condemned as an ordinary person. He actually had some understanding, and he performed sacrifice to achieve his goal, as Prabhupada describes here. Whatever your desire is, spiritual or material, it has to be fulfilled by the performance of sacrifice, yajna. And so if you perform Sankirtan yajna, chanting the holy name, that is the best way to please the Lord in this age of Kali. It's the most complete way. And as Sukracharya confirmed to Lord Vamandev at the end of the Leela, Vamandev and Bali Maharaj, Bali Maharaj was performing a sacrifice, but then it was interrupted, and so Sukracharya faulted Bali Maharaj for not completing the sacrifice. And so at the end, after Vamadeva had taken everything away from Bali Maharaj and Sukracharya. Vamandev turned to Sukracharya and said, well, tell me what was the fault of your disciple in the performance of the sacrifice. And he had to admit, Sukracharya had to admit that, no, there's no fault because the chanting of the holy name was there. You also quoted that verse yesterday. Anu Sankirtanam. When that chanting of the holy name is there, then there's no fault that can be ascribed. Pururava was in Treta Yuga, so Yajna was the process there. He engaged in Yajna. According to the Yuga he was in, and so what fault can be found in such a person? So these are some thoughts about Pururava that hopefully would give us a broader perspective than just thinking he's an ordinary lusty person, and why this description is there in this point in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So any comments or questions about these subject matters? Yes?
Just thought I might ask this question. It might be in other people's minds too. And I'll tell a funny story to start. One time a person was fault finding this other person. He says, she had 15 husbands. The other one said, why are you fault finding? She only had 7. So the question would be that, is this just, if a person, can a person use this as an excuse? Prabhupada gave us very strict principles, and he didn't seem to minimize them at all. I mean, it's inconceivable that we're Kali Yuga living entities and we're supposed to follow more strictly than everyone. But it didn't seem like Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya either wanted to give much license. He has that pastime of Junya Haridas. So the question will be, since the living entities are such rascals, won't they just use this for justifying their illicit activities?
Well, that's certainly possible. I think that you're right. My point here is not to offer some counter to what has been put there, but to present another perspective to maybe balance it out. Yes, people will use any excuse for themselves to escape the faults that they display. And that shouldn't be. That's more harmful for them than anybody else. But at the same time, I think that when we look on someone who displays some fault, that we also shouldn't, do as you said in your story, say, well, like you had 7, so you're, in other words, we're still digging in. In other words, there's a certain fault that we display when we see the faults of others. And we shouldn't fall into justifying that or justifying that we're displaying a fault. And so both things need to be avoided. And so just a different perspective on Pururava today, that's all.
Yes. I liked your take on it, because when I heard the verse this morning, it stated in the verse that he did the yajna that pleased the Supreme Lord Hari. So, I mean, not that I was thinking he was ordinary anyway, but if anybody was thinking he was just some ordinary guy, that statement right there, he pleased the Supreme Lord by yajna.
Thank you. Yes, over here.
All right. My name is Melba, and through the whole that we are listening to this subject, we all have different learnings, and I'm new into this knowledge of the Vedics. But my race, my way I believe, and the learning through my life, we all have different perceptions and see teachings. And for me, it's being a beautiful, and I want to put it out there. If it's not agreeing, I want to be corrected. But the way I perceive all this lesson is the nature of this person is just the nature of all of us. And by performing the sacrifice through the all the scriptures in the planet, is always being symbols. Okay, so by him performing this sacrifice, he is sacrificing his own fire, his own nature, and for the higher purpose. Mm. So it is a beautiful, for it's, today is like, for me, the closing that I perceived yesterday, starting perceiving yesterday, and today is like the final, wow, yeah. He was sacrificing his own nature, which is represented by the fire, for a higher, you know, for Vishnu. Mm-hmm. And this is all just because my teachings when I was a child, learning what the fire of the Kundalini, how powerful you can transform it into lust and lose yourself into the world, or you can sacrifice it and got raised to the higher planets, which was his purpose today. Mm. Just go to the higher planets and to Vishnu. So it's just my perception. It's a beautiful teaching. Thank you.
Mm. Thank you. I think your understanding is, based on your experiences, in line with the lessons we can learn from this. So that's good. Thank you. Anything else? Yes, Ganagami.
When we look at Prabhupada's example of a judge, one time he had to judge a man whether he's guilty or innocent. He killed someone, and so the judge, they called an authority, a psychiatrist, to ascertain whether the murderer was incompetent or to make decisions and so forth, whether he was temporarily insane. And the psychiatrist said, of all the people I've examined, thousands of people, he said, no one is virtually sane. So this goes along with what Bhima is saying, but at the same time, we have to, everybody has to take some responsibility for what they're doing. It's not that, well, I'm insane, I'm a conditioned soul, and I can do whatever I like, you know, and just hope to get the mercy, I'll perform a little yoga. So we have to take on this mantle of responsibility for our actions, and that's the basis of all law, you know. So in the conclusion of what, of course, Krishna can always step in and be merciful, but that's our obligation on our side, is to take responsibility for the actions.
Thank you. Madan Mohan.
I was thinking about it in a practical way also, is there's a difference in the result that he gets down the line too from going through this experience. And I believe they used the term residue, is that sinful activities, when they're performed sinfully, produce a residue that has you do them over and over again. But when they're done in a... an activity that's generally not supported very well, is done in a way that is connected with the Vedas, then it doesn't produce the residue. So in the future, there will be a different thinking about this whole activity. And what was that, the verse Damar likes to quote, 11, 20, 27, that a devotee sometimes may do something that's... regrettable, but because he regrets it later on, sincerely regrets it, he moves along. So in this situation, the result is going to be different. We'll see later on that he comes to think that this wasn't such a good idea, maybe I shouldn't do it again. And that idea is built into a lot of came to his senses, you know.
Well, in the 11th canto, as has been referred to here, he sort of repents his or regrets his actions here. But taking the path of performing sacrifice to achieve one's goals are certainly better than just doing them in sinful ways, both in terms of getting the result that you want, actually, and avoiding sinful reactions for going after your desires in ways which aren't authorized, so to speak. So, yeah.
Sometimes they would use the word, we can work with that. Okay, this is where you're coming from. We can work with that. We'll take you from there and we'll still deliver you to
that. Well, that's what the Vedas are. The Vedas are a desire tree that gives you whatever you want, how you can get it. And also instruction about what you should want and what you shouldn't want. You know, as well. Anything else anyone has?
Just that it says in the 10th canto in the Krishna book story on the deliverance of Lord Shiva, and elsewhere I think also, that when Krishna sees that you have a desire that's not so good for you, but he understands that your real desire is worshiping him, then he sometimes fulfills that desire in such a way that the desire becomes productive of a lesson that you wouldn't have ordinarily asked for. So, and the desire becomes eradicated from the heart, which is what happened to Bhairava. I mean, he suffered so much that he finally got the point. So sometimes it seems like a cruel happening, but it's Krishna's, you know, experiential learning kind of thing.
All right, well, better stay on the path one way or another that Krishna's advocating than stray off of it and try to do things on your own, because then things can really get out of control. Thank you. So I think we'll end there. Rantarat Srimad Bhagavatam.